Good morning. It's wonderful to see such a nice group at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning. I'm Leah Doozy. I'm an agricultural economist with USDA ARS in Auburn, Alabama. I'm at the National Soil Dynamics Lab. I'm part of the Conservation Systems Research Team. And I want to recognize my colleague, Dr. Kip Balkum, who's also on this presentation. It's his project that I'm working with him on, the data comes from. So to get... The topic is kind of vague, managing cover crops and economic perspective, but I'll kind of explain why it is a little vague in just a minute. This is a map that comes from a publication that was in Amber Waves recently in 2016 by Bowman, Wallander, and Lynch, and it was economic perspective on soil health. And what they did is they took the data out of the census on a county level that looks at the cover crop acres from 2012, and they looked at it as a share of harvested acres with cover crops and how that varies regionally. And the reason why I'm putting this up there is so you can see here in Alabama, Alabama's a pretty diverse state, so we have a lot of cover crops up in the top of the state and at the bottom of the state. In the middle, we just don't have a lot of cropland. So in Alabama, we have about 7% of our total cropland in cover crops. So it's going to be a little bit more when you look at it from a harvested cropland perspective. But you can see a lot of it's concentrated down here in the coastal plains and up in northern Alabama. And so what we're seeing is that we're getting a lot of questions that aren't whether or not people should adopt a cover crop, but how do they manage a cover crop? So if I, as a producer, am going to adopt a cover crop, how do I manage it so that I can maximize my benefits and with the lowest costs? And so that's really where we're moving our research. In the past, our research has really been focused on a cover crop versus no cover crop. Well, we know that cover crops work in Alabama. It's evident in our adoption in the state and the places where that really benefit from the cover crop. So most of the time, our objective with a cover crop is for weed suppression, soil erosion, building soil organic matter. We have a hard time holding our soil organic matter from year to year because it's hot and very hot and wet. And so we're really looking at building that soil organic matter. So for the most part, we've always used a 90 pounds of rye in 101 kilograms of rye. Along with the fertilizer to really get the growth going. We also use chemical and mechanical termination using a roller. So we have a very high biomass, heavily managed cover crop that we've been looking at. So we're looking at now, how do we adopt that to answer some of the questions from producers? And those questions also show up in the SARE surveys that have come out, where these are the challenges with using cover crops that have been identified by users and non-users. So you can see establishment, cover crop, seed cost, time and labor, and then at the bottom here, no measurable economic return. And so that's really where we're focusing some of our newer research, is how do we manage that cover crop to try to answer some of these challenges. So this study that I'm going to be talking about today is fairly new. We started it in 2014-15, so the cover crop was first planted at the fall of 2014. It's in Headland, Alabama, which is down here at the Wiregrass Research Extension Center. So it's in our coastal plain area of Alabama. And so this is a six-year experiment. So we're only talking about the first 2 years right now. So in 2014-15, in 15 we planted peanuts, and in 16 we planted cotton. So this is going to be a peanut-cotton rotation with a rye cover crop in the winter. So like I said, we're really looking at how we manage the cover crop. This is just cereal rye. We find that when we're trying to get high biomass, the rye does well. It comes on early and it grows. We're looking at about 4,500 kilograms per hectare is what we like to see, but a lot of times we can get a lot more than that, and you'll see that in the results. We had four different planting dates. We had mid to late October, early to mid-November, mid to late November, and then early to mid-December. Most of our producers who are struggling to get their cover crops in, it's because of timing. And they're like, well, I can't get them in, so I'm not going to do them. Well, we're trying to show them why they need to try to get their cover crops in earlier. Also, we looked at two seeding rates because we tend to use this 100 kilograms per hectare. We're also looking at a lower seeding rate of 67 kilograms per hectare. And then we have four different nitrogen rates because we do recommend nitrogen so that they can get – in the past, we've used nitrogen in our experiments because we want to get as much growth as we can in the fall. So we usually use the 34 kilograms per hectare, but we have a 0, a 67, and a 100 to try to look at the interaction between planting date and nitrogen. So if you can't plant it until early to mid-December, should you use more nitrogen to really get the growth going? And this was the 67 and the 100 were split applied in the fall and spring. I'll also mention, because this will come up in the cost, we use Renzabruzzi. It does well in Alabama. The producers like it, but it is more expensive because of supply problems. So it is going to up my seed cost. It's what you might be used to in areas where you can get rye fairly easy. We do have a problem getting Renzabruzzi in large enough supplies, so that drives our price up. So for cover crop management, I won't go through this in depth, but we had the four planting dates. So planting date two was about 14 days to 25 days after the first planting, then 32 days later, and then 48 days later from that first planting date. We terminated both of them in April, and then we usually have between 3 to 4 weeks between termination and planting of our cash crop. And you can see it was harvested both peanuts and cotton were both harvested in early October. So that's just a little bit about the dates between. We tried to stay the same. We get a little bit later here, but you'll see why in just a minute. So this, I wanted to show the rainfall and growing degree days just because for the cover crop, separate from the cash crop, because it really shows you what we were looking at with our results. So you'll see we'll start with 2014. 2015, we had about 587 millimeters over the growing period. Zero is the first planting date. The red arrows indicate the second, third, and fourth planting dates. 2014-15 were pretty normal, but you can see we're getting these really heavy rainfall events. And you'll notice it shows up here even more so. So after planting the first cover crop in mid to late October, you'll see we got almost 300 millimeters of rain. Cover crops really don't like that very much at all. At least the rye didn't. And so then we planted the second one, and then we planted here the fourth one, and we got another almost 225, 250 millimeters of rain. So we had a lot of really heavy rain events. So at the end of the growing season for the cover crop, when we terminated, we'd got 988 millimeters of rain. So in Headland, in an average year, we get about 1,473 millimeters of rain on average for the whole year. So within the growing season of just the cover crop from October to April, we got 988 millimeters. So this year was wet and hot for our cover crop growing season. So moving on to the cash crop, you'll see they pretty much followed similar patterns. We still got some pretty heavy rain events throughout there. The red arrows indicate this is irrigated, but we just irrigated to keep it alive. So it's and I don't have the cotton on there because I didn't have that information because we just finished up that harvest. So we had about 676 millimeters in 2015 and 502 millimeters. So it was a little bit drier in 2016 than 2015, but our cotton, as you'll see in a little bit, still did pretty well. So our cost for establishing and terminating cover crops, I'm just looking at the variable treatment costs related to cover crops. So this would be the zero fertilizer rate, and this would be the 67. So this is your seeding rates and your cover crop fertilizer rates. So like for the lower seeding rate, it ranges from $97 a hectare to $233-$234 a hectare. So that's the cost to do the cover crop, and that includes the other costs here, includes machinery, labor, and interest on operating capital. And then, so what I did is I took these numbers and I calculated the average variable cost for each treatment per 100 kilograms of biomass. So it's what does it cost to produce 100 kilograms of biomass. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it from an average cost standpoint. So you can see when you get up here to the higher seeding rates, the higher seeding rate with nitrogen, you're looking at almost $261 a hectare. So I'm going to show you the biomass, and then I'm going to show you the average variable cost because they kind of go together. So this is just planting date. So you see the earlier you plant it, the more biomass you get. And that's what we expected to see, and that's what we tell our producers when we're working with them. So as you go towards the later planting date, you get less biomass. And this is why planting early is better from an economic perspective. It's costing you a lot less per. If you're looking at producing biomass, if that's the crop you're producing, then you're producing it for a lot less money if you plant early. So you're looking at about $4 per 100 kilograms to produce the cover crop versus over almost $8.50. So from a seeding rate standpoint, there's no statistical difference between seeding rates from a biomass standpoint. So 67 kilograms per hectare produced the same as 101, and this is over the 2 years. So this is with 2 years of data. But you can see there is a statistical difference in average cost. So using the 90, which you would expect, because the 90, the 100 kilograms per hectare is going to cost more than the 67 kilograms per hectare. So there is a statistical difference in average cost. So it's cheaper on a per 100 kilogram basis to produce it using the lower seeding rate. So this is 2015. This is biomass plant date by N rate. So at the bottom you have your plant dates, and in the bars you have your N rates. And nitrogen I used, for nitrogen I used about a little over a dollar per kilogram of nitrogen. The more nitrogen you put on, the more nitrogen you put on, the higher your biomass. So even in this first year, you see this is your zero, and this is your 101 kilograms of nitrogen. So as you put on more nitrogen, you're getting more biomass. And that trend holds through as you get into later and later into your growing season, into planting of your cover crop. In 2016, because we got so much water, so much rainfall so early in the season, we saw no difference. In biomass, by plant. Well, we did. There was a little bit of statistical difference between the early planting date. Okay, between the early planting date and the late planting date. But within the treatments, when it comes to nitrogen, there was no statistical difference. And partly that's because we got so much rain after applying nitrogen, and we lost some of that, so we didn't see any statistical difference. However, when you look at it, so this is from the cost standpoint, so average cost per 100 kilograms of biomass. You can see in this last planting date, it's costing you a lot. It's costing you less money if you put on nitrogen than if you don't, because the biomass is so different. So from a lease cost standpoint, it's only about $4. So if you're a producer and you're producing later, probably better to put on a little bit of nitrogen from a cost standpoint. 2016 was a little bit different. You can see, and that's just because of the difference in how much biomass we received. So it's almost exactly opposite. It was in 2015, and that's directly related to our rainfall. So from a yield and net return standpoint, this is pretty much the only slide I did on this because we only have 1 year of data for each crop, and I didn't break it down. So our average yield for peanuts was 4,700 kilograms per hectare, which is pretty close to average, a little bit above average for that county in 2015. Cotton, we had a really good cotton year. We had 2,000 kilograms per hectare for our yields on cotton, which were definitely above average in some cases. And so, and then what I did for net returns is that's actually net returns above variable treatment costs, which would be net returns above the cost of the cover crop. And so, but then I listed here irrigated cotton in Alabama. You're looking at about $1,300 per hectare to produce irrigated cotton, that doesn't include your yield varying costs or your cover crop costs, because they're captured in this number here. That is yield varying costs and your cover crop costs. So the question that I'll be moving into as we get more data on our commodity crops is, does higher biomass translate into higher net returns? And so I quickly looked at that just from that 1 year of data. And from 2015, where we had peanuts and we really had a good interaction of increasing biomass with increasing biomass earlier planted and also increasing biomass with nitrogen use, it does appear that there is a positive relationship between biomass and peanut yields. But once again, that's with 1 year of data. And if you remember, with the data from the cotton, for the biomass before the cotton, there was pretty much no difference in the biomass across our treatments. And there was no relationship between cotton and biomass because there was very little difference in the treatments in that case. So that's where we're kind of moving with this. So how do we manage the cover crop for the least cost, and how does that translate into our yields? From a biomass standpoint, does more biomass equal higher yields on our commodity crops? And since we have two commodity crops that we're looking at, it really gives us a nice data set. So the conclusion is that we're moving from do cover crops work to how do we manage the cover crops to maximize our biomass and minimize our costs. So what we've found preliminary in 2 years of data is that cover crops planted in mid to late October, it does produce higher biomass, and that's what I think most of us would agree that we expect that to happen. But it had lower average costs than cover crops planted later. So it's less expensive to plant your cover crop earlier. So while there is no difference between biomass, That always throws me off a bit. While there's no difference between biomass, lower seeding rates had a lower average cost. So the lower seeding rate produced the same amount of biomass as the higher seeding rate, but there was lower average cost when averaged across both years. In 2015, higher nitrogen rates, there was higher biomass, but they did have similar average costs. And in 2016, the biomasses were biomass levels were similar, but the average cost did increase with nitrogen rates. So with that, that's the end of my presentation. Do I have a minute for questions? Or no? No. Okay.